Chapter 11. By replying thus to Pavel Pavlovich's greeting, Velchaninov surprised himself. It seemed strange indeed to him that he should now meet this man without any feelings of anger, and that there should be something quite novel in his feelings towards Pavel Pavlovich, a sort of call to new relations with him. "What a lovely evening," said Pavel Pavlovich, looking observantly into the other's eyes. "So you haven't gone away yet," murmured Velchaninov, not in a tone of inquiry, but as though musing upon the fact as he continued to walk on. "I've been a good deal delayed, but I've obtained my petition, my new post, with rise of salary. I'm off the day after tomorrow for certain." "What? You've obtained the new situation?" "And why not?" said Pavel Pavlovich with a crooked smile. "Oh, I meant nothing particular by my remark," said Velchaninov, frowning, and glancing sidelong at his companion. To his surprise, Pavel Pavlovich, both in dress and appearance, even down to the hat with the crepe band, was incomparably neater and tidier-looking than he was wont to be a fortnight since. "Why was he sitting in the public-house, then?" thought Velchaninov. This fact puzzled him much. "I wish to let you know of my other great joy, Alexei Ivanovich," resumed Pavel.
"Joy? I'm going to marry."
"What?"
"Yes, sir. After sorrow, joy. It is ever thus in life. Oh, Alexei Ivanovich, I should so much like if... But you look as though you were in a great hurry." "Yes, I am in a hurry, and I am ill besides." He felt as though he would give anything to get rid of the man. The feeling of readiness to develop new and better relations with him had vanished in a moment.
"I should so much like..." Pavel Pavlovich did not finish his sentence. Velchaninov kept silence and waited.
"In that case, perhaps another time, if we should happen to meet."
"Yes, yes, another time," said Velchaninov quickly, continuing to move along and never looking at his companion. Nothing was said for another minute or two. Pavel Pavlovich continued to trot alongside.
"In that case, au revoir," he blurted at last. "Au revoir. I hope..."
Velchaninov did not think it necessary to hear him complete his sentence. He left Pavel and returned home much agitated. The meeting with that fellow had been too much for his present state of mind. As he lay down upon his bed, the thought came over him once more. Why was that fellow there, close to the cemetery? He determined to go down to the Pogorieltsevs next morning, not that he felt inclined to go. Any sympathy was intolerably painful to him. But they had been so kind and so anxious about him that he must really make up his mind to go. But next day, while finishing his breakfast, he felt terribly disinclined for the visit. He felt, as it were, shy of meeting them for the first time after his grief. "Shall I go or not?" he was saying to himself, as he sat at his table, when suddenly, to his extreme amazement, in walked Pavel Pavlovich. In spite of yesterday's rencontre, Velchaninov could not have believed that this man would ever enter his rooms again, and when he now saw him appear, he gazed at him in such absolute astonishment that he simply did not know what to say. But Pavel Pavlovich took the management of the matter into his own hands. He said, "Good morning," and sat down in the very same chair which he had occupied on his last visit 3 weeks since. This circumstance reminded Velchaninov too painfully of that visit, and he glared at his visitor with disgust and some agitation.
"You are surprised, I see," said Pavel Pavlovich, reading the other's expression.
He seemed to be both freer, more at his ease, and yet more timid than yesterday. His outward appearance was very curious to behold, for Pavel Pavlovich was not only neatly dressed, he was got up in the pink of fashion. He had on a neat summer overcoat, with a pair of light trousers and a white waistcoat.
his gloves, his gold eyeglasses, quite a new acquisition, and his linen were quite above all criticism. He wafted an odour of sweet scent when he moved. He looked funny, but his appearance awakened strange thoughts besides. "Of course I have surprised you, Alexei Ivanovitch," he said, twisting himself about. "I see it. But in my opinion, there should be a something exalted, something higher, untouched and unattainable by petty discords or the ordinary conditions of life between man and man. Don't you agree with me, sir?" "Pavel Pavlovich, say what you have to say as quickly as you can and without further ceremony," said Velchaninov, frowning angrily. "In a couple of words, sir," said Pavel hurriedly, "I am going to be married, and I am now off to see my bride at once. She lives in the country, and what I desire is the profound honour of introducing you to the family, sir. In fact, I have come here to petition you, sir." Pavel Pavlovich bent his head deferentially. "To beg you to go down with me." "Go down with you? Where to?" cried the other, his eyes starting out of his head. "To their house in the country, sir. Forgive me, my dear sir, if I am too agitated and confuse my words, but I am so dreadfully afraid of hearing you refuse me." He looked at Velchaninov plaintively. "You wish me to accompany you to see your bride," said Velchaninov, staring keenly at Pavel Pavlovich. He could not believe either his eyes or his ears. "Yes, yes, sir," murmured Pavel, who had suddenly become timid to a painful degree. "Don't be angry, Alexei Ivanovitch. It is not my audacity that prompts me to ask you this. I do it with all humility, and conscious of the unusual nature of my petition. I thought perhaps you would not refuse my humble request." "In the first place, the thing is absolutely out of the question," said Velchaninov, turning away in considerable mental perturbation. "It is only my immeasurable longing that prompts me to ask you. I confess I have a reason for desiring it, which reason I propose to reveal to you afterwards. Just now I—" "The thing is quite impossible, however you may look at it. You must admit yourself that it is so," cried Velchaninov. Both men had risen from their chairs in the excitement of the conversation. "Not at all, not at all. It is quite possible, sir. In the first place, I merely propose to introduce you as my friend, and in the second place, you know the family already. The Zakhlebnikovs, State Councillor Zakhlebnikov." "What? How so?" cried Velchaninov. This was the very man whom he had so often tried to find at home, and whom he never succeeded in hunting down, the very lawyer who had acted for his adversary in the late legal proceedings. "Why, certainly, certainly," cried Pavel Pavlovich, apparently taking heart at Velchaninov's extreme display of amazement. "The very same who I saw you talking to in the street one day, when I watched you from the other side of the road. I was waiting my turn to speak to him then. We served in the same department 12 years since. I had no thought of all this that day I saw you with him. The whole idea is quite new and sudden, only a week old. But, excuse me, why surely this is a most respectable family, isn't it?" asked Velchaninov naively. "Well, and what if it is respectable?" asked Pavel with a twist. "Oh, no, of course I meant nothing. But so far as I could judge from what I saw there—" "They remember. They remember your coming down," cried Pavel delightedly. "I told them all sorts of flattering things about you." "But look here. How are you to marry within 3 months of your late wife's death?" "Oh, the wedding needn't be at once. The wedding can come off in 9 or 10 months, so that I shall have been in mourning exactly a year. Believe me, my dear sir, it's all most charming. First place, Fedosey Petrovich has known me since I was a child. He knew my late wife. He knows how much income I have. He knows all about my little private capital, and all about my new increase of salary. so that, you see, the whole thing is a mere matter of weights and scales.
Is she a daughter of his, then?
I'll tell you all about it, said Pavel, licking his lips with pleasure. May I smoke a cigarette? Now, you see, men like Fedosey Petrovich Zakhlebnikov are much valued in the state. But, excepting for a few perquisites allowed them, the pay is wretched. They live well enough, but they cannot possibly lay by money. Now imagine, this man has 8 daughters and only 1 little boy. If he were to die, there would be nothing but a wretched little pension to keep the lot of them. Just imagine now, boots alone for such a family, eh? Well, out of these girls, 5 are marriageable. The eldest is 24 already. A splendid girl she is. You shall see her for yourself. The 6th is a girl of 15, still at school. Well, all those 5 elder girls have to be trotted about and shown off. And what does all that sort of thing cost the poor father, sir? They must be married. Then, suddenly, I appear on the scene, the first probable bridegroom in the family. And they all know that I have money. Well, there you are, sir. The thing's done. Pavel Pavlovich was intoxicated with enthusiasm. Are you engaged to the eldest?
No, not the eldest. I am wooing the 6th girl, the one at school.
What? Cried Velchaninov, laughing in spite of himself. Why, you say yourself, she's only 15 years old.
15 now, sir, but she'll be 16 in 9 months.
16 and 3 months. So why not?
It wouldn't be quite nice to make the engagement public just yet, though, so there's to be nothing formal at present. It's only a private arrangement between the parents and myself so far. Believe me, my dear sir, the whole thing is apple pie, regular and charming.
Then it isn't quite settled yet?
Oh, quite settled. Quite settled, believe me. It's all as right and tight as...
Does she know?
Well, you see, just for form's sake, it is not actually talked about. To her, I mean. But she knows well enough.
Oh, now you will make me happy this once, Alexei Ivanovich, won't you? He concluded, with extreme timidity of voice and manner.
But why should I go with you?
However, added Velchaninov impatiently, as I am not going in any case, I don't see why I should hear any reasons you may adduce for my accompanying you.
Alexei Ivanovich!
Oh, come! You don't suppose I am going to sit down in a carriage with you alongside and drive down there? Come, just think for yourself.
The feeling of disgust and displeasure which Pavel Pavlovich had awakened in him before had now started into life again after the momentary distraction of the man's foolery about his bride. He felt that in another minute or two he might kick the fellow out before he realized what he was doing. He felt angry with himself for some reason or other.
"Sit down, Alexei Ivanovich, sit down. You shall not repent it," said Pavel Pavlovich in a wheedling voice.
"No, no, no," he added, deprecating the impatient gesture which Velchaninov made at this moment.
"Alexei Ivanovich, I entreat you to pause before you decide definitely. I see you have quite misunderstood me. I quite realize that I am not for you, nor you for me. I am not quite so absurd as to be unaware of that fact. The service I ask of you now shall not compromise you in any way for the future. I am going away the day after tomorrow for certain. Let this one day be an exceptional one for me, sir. I came to you, founding my hopes upon the generosity and nobility of heart, Alexei Ivanovich, upon those special tender feelings which may perhaps have been aroused in you by late events. Am I explaining myself clearly, sir, or do you still misunderstand me?"
The agitation of Pavel Pavlovich was increasing with every moment. Velchaninov gazed curiously at him.
"You ask a service of me," he said thoughtfully, "and insist strongly upon my performance of it. This is very suspicious, in my opinion. I must know more."
"The whole service I ask is merely that you will come with me, and I promise, when we return, that I will lay bare my heart to you as though we are at a confessional. Trust me this once, Alexei Ivanovitch. But Velchaninov still held out, and the more obstinately because he was conscious of a certain worrying feeling which he had had ever since Pavel Pavlovich began to talk about his bride. Whether this feeling was simple curiosity or something quite inexplicable, he knew not. Whatever it was, it urged him to agree and go, and the more the instinct urged him, the more he resisted it. He sat and thought for a long time, his head resting on his hand, while Pavel Pavlovich buzzed about him and continued to repeat his arguments. "Very well," he said at last. "Very well, I'll go." He was agitated, almost to trembling pitch. Pavel was radiant. "Then, Alexei Ivanovitch, change your clothes. Dress up, will you? Dress up in your own style. You know so well how to do it." Pavel Pavlovich danced about Velchaninov as he dressed. His state of mind was exuberantly blissful. "What in the world does the fellow mean by it all?" thought Velchaninov. "I'm going to ask you one more favour yet, Alexei Ivanovitch," cried the other. "You've consented to come. You must be my guide, sir, too." "For instance, how?" "Well, for instance, here's an important question. The crepe. Which ought I to do? Tear it off or leave it on?"
"Just as you like."
"No, I want your opinion. What should you do yourself if you were wearing crepe under the circumstances? My own idea was that if I left it on, I should be giving a proof of the fidelity of my affections. A very flattering recommendation, eh, sir?"
"Oh, take it off, of course."
"Do you really think it's a matter of course?" Pavel Pavlovich reflected. "No," he continued. "Do you know, I think I'd rather leave it on."
"Well, do as you like. He doesn't trust me at all events, which is one good thing," thought Velchaninov.
They left the house at last. Pavel looked over his companion's smart costume with intense satisfaction. Velchaninov was greatly surprised at Pavel's conduct, but not less so at his own. At the gate there stood a very superior open carriage.
"Hm. So you had a carriage in waiting, had you? Then you were quite convinced that I would consent to come down with you, I suppose."
"I took the carriage for my own use, but I was nearly sure you would come," said Pavel Pavlovich, who wore the air of a man whose cup of happiness is full to the brim.
"Don't you think you are a little too sanguine in trusting so much to my benevolence?" asked Velchaninov, as they took their seats and started. He smiled as he spoke, but his heart was full of annoyance.
"Well, Alexei Ivanovitch, it is not for you to call me a fool for that," replied Pavel, firmly and impressively.
"Hm. And Lisa?" thought Velchaninov, but he chased the idea away. He felt as though it were sacrilege to think of her here, and immediately another thought came in, namely, how small, how petty a creature he must be himself to harbour such a thought, such a mean, paltry sentiment in connection with Lisa's sacred name. So angry was he felt as though he must stop the carriage and get out, even though it cost him a struggle with Pavel Pavlovich to do so. But at this moment Pavel spoke, and the old feeling of desire to go with him re-entered his soul.
"Alexei Ivanovitch," Pavel said, "are you a judge of articles of value?"
"What sort of articles?"
"Diamonds."
"Yes."
"I wish to take down a present with me. What do you think? Ought I to give her one or not?"
"Quite unnecessary, I should think. But I wish to do it badly.
The only thing is, what shall I give? A whole set? Brooch, earrings, bracelet and all? Or only one article?"
"How much do you wish to spend?"
"Oh, 400 or 500 rubles.
"Bosh!
"What, too much? Buy one bracelet for about 100.
The advice depressed Pavel Pavlovich. He grew wondrous melancholy. He was terribly anxious to spend a lot of money and buy the whole set. He insisted upon the necessity of doing so.
A shop was reached and entered, and Pavel bought a bracelet after all, and that not the one he chose himself,
but the one which his companion fixed upon. Pavel wished to buy both. When the shopman, who originally asked 175, let the bracelet go for 150 rubles, Pavel Pavlovich was anything but pleased. He was most anxious to spend a lot of money on the young lady, and would have gladly paid 200 rubles for the same goods on the slightest encouragement. "It doesn't matter, my being in a hurry to give her presents, does it?" he began excitedly when they were back in the carriage, and rolling along once more. "They are not swells at all. They live most simply." "Innocence loves presents," he continued, smiling cunningly. "You laughed just now, Alexei Ivanovich, when I said that the girl was only 15. But you know, what specially struck me about her was that she still goes to school, with a sweet little bag in her hand, containing copybooks and pencils. It was the little satchel that fetched me. I do love innocence, Alexei Ivanovich. I don't care half so much for good looks as for innocence. Fancy, she and her friend were sitting in the corner there the other day, and roared with laughter because the cat jumped from a cupboard onto the sofa and fell down all of a heap. Why, it smells of fresh apples, that does, sir. Shall I take off the crepe, eh?" "Do as you like." "Well, I'll take it off." He took his hat, tore the crepe off, and threw the latter into the road. Velchaninov remarked that, as he put his hat on his bald head once more, he wore an expression of the simplest and frankest hope and delight. "Is he really that sort of man?" thought Velchaninov with annoyance. "He surely can't be trundling me down here without some underhand motive. Impossible! He can't be trusting entirely to my generosity." This last idea seemed to fill him with indignation. "What is this clown of a fellow?" he continued to reflect. "Is he a fool, an idiot, or simply a permanent husband? I can't make head or tail of it all."